today on a classic Compassion Radio.
You know, I love serving these communities in a different aspect than what I was used to, but it's a very rewarding career to be able to, you know, just help people and show God's love through helping others, especially, you know, when there's the worst moment in their lives.
Yeah. God's calling on your life is uniquely your own. It's your job to seek it out, and God's joy to help you find it. Hello, friends. Bram Floria here with Compassion Radio. When you're raised in a ministry home, you can get a certain image of what ministry is and what it can be. But what if you are called to ministry, but it's not going to look like what you or anybody else expected? Well, that's the story of today's special guest. He's a young man on the make, but he's not after what we might consider worldly success. No, he knows God put him in his family for a purpose, one that led to where he's serving now. And that path to purpose put him in the path of Hurricane Laura, which devastated Lake Charles, Louisiana on August 27th, 2020. Today with us is an eyewitness to some of the big news stories of the past few weeks. Riley Grisham, down in Grand Coteau and Lafayette area of Louisiana. Welcome to Compassion Radio.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, you've had an interesting couple of weeks. Tell me more about where you're working and your position there with the fire department in that part of the state.
I am the part-time fire chief for a small town just north of Lafayette called Grand Coteau. I work full-time for a bigger town, but I work part-time there. Recently got promoted to interim chief.
Well, congratulations.
And, no, thank you. And I volunteer for the town I live in, so I guess it's an understatement to say I stay kind of busy.
You got a lot of hats, my friend.
Yes, I do.
Do you like the town you're living in?
Oh, I love it. It's so charming. And in fact, the town that I'm the chief in, we have the oldest religious institution on this side of the Mississippi River. We have the Jesuit College. We also have the Academy of the Sacred Heart, which has been one of the longest running educational institutions because it's a private all-girls Catholic school. And it's been around since, you know, mid-1800s. So it's really cool to have all that old architecture around.
Now, I have high respect for your family already. We've talked to your dad a number of times about the incredible work up there at the church in Shreveport, Louisiana, where he served as missions pastor. And he and I had a lot of history, and your mom as well, back in the day when we were doing music missions in the 80s and 90s. So we have a lot of love for each other and respect for how God's brought us through different chapters in our lives. And of course, the stories of how he has us serving now as a result of all that missional experience earlier in life, you know, those are great stories, and you are one of those stories. So tell me a little bit about where God has you in life and why you chose to choose the path of service you have right now.
Growing up in church with a father who's a pastor, you know, I was always serving in the church. I just felt the Lord was taking me in a different direction because I, you know, I'd always thought maybe I would stay in the church, maybe I would become a pastor, maybe an associate or something like that. When I was about 15, one of my dad's really good friends, he was a fireman for the city we're living in up in Shreveport. He let me do one of those ride-alongs.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, one thing led to another, and I got involved with a volunteer fire department up there. I had a friend of mine who became the fire chief for an area around where I'm at. I didn't want to leave Shreveport. I wanted to stay around there. I wanted to find a job up there. But he was like, come on, come work for a little while, and then you can move back if there's a job opening up. And I felt led to come on down here, and I've been here ever since. I bought a house a couple years ago, so you know, I love it, serving these communities in a different aspect than what I was used to. But it's a very rewarding career to be able to, you know, just help people and show God's love through helping others, especially, you know, when there's the worst moment in their lives.
Yeah. And there have been plenty of those worst moments in the past few weeks. You're in a part of Louisiana, too, out west of Baton Rouge and out east of Lake Charles, which would be, for most people traveling through on the interstates, was considered nothing but swampland out there. But, of course, it's pockmarked with all kinds of small communities that have rich histories well back before even Civil War times. These are old, old communities, but they're hidden, and they're scattered. So they don't have a lot of the resources built in. In fact, as you mentioned, you've been promoted to being the interim fire chief for a city or a township in a parish that is
not really highly populated, but there are people hiding in those woods all through that part of the state. So every rescue, every act of service is going to be traveling many a long, small, windy road. So tell me about what led up to preparing for the hurricane that just came through and ravaged your state.
Well, when it was coming through, and this was a nerve-wracking experience for me in our area because this was the first big storm I've been through as a chief, promoted about 2 weeks prior. So, so ready or not, here it comes.
Yeah.
So, you know, as fire department goes, you know, we make sure all of our equipment's together and ready, make sure we got plenty of fuel for saws and stuff, and meeting with town leaders and utilities department and police departments and everything to make sure everybody is ready to go and everybody's on the same page.
Good.
And I'm fortunate to say that we didn't get hit hard in our area. We had some strong winds and some rain, but it wasn't near as bad as anyone thought it was.
Yeah.
So whenever the storm was over, we were ready to go back to normal.
And I understand that the storm itself was kind of like a pretty concentrated bullseye. So when it hit Lake Charles and then moved up over across Shreveport, most of the concentrated winds were very concentrated. It wasn't as wide a soaking event like Katrina was over New Orleans a few years ago. You're still on the periphery of that, and you probably cross over certain lines where suddenly you can tell that the winds picked up tremendously and damage was increased tremendously as well. You didn't get hit so hard right where you were, so what did you do to go serve?
When the storm was over, because I was actually on vacation during the time, I was supposed to go up to Pennsylvania for one of my cousin's weddings, but unfortunately I wasn't able to make that. We had so much stuff going on with preparing for the storm. I felt whenever everything was happening, I felt like, you know, I'm probably not going to be able to make this wedding, and I felt bad, you know, because it's my cousin's wedding.
Yeah.
I just felt like there was something holding me back. And, you know, talking to my dad about that, he was like, well, you know, it'll be okay. We'll figure something out, get refunds for flights and stuff. Immediately after, I'm thinking to myself, like, hey, it's not that bad here. Why do I have this feeling like that my vacation that I've been planning for months and months isn't going to go through like I planned it to? And then I had a real good friend of mine, Joe Giddies. He's a Slidell fireman. For those of you not familiar with Slidell, it's on the other side of New Orleans. So it's in between Mississippi and New Orleans.
It was one of the big launching pads, along with Covington, for the relief flotillas that got sent down south across Lake Pontchartrain into New Orleans proper, correct?
Yes. It's about 3.5 hours from me. So he was coming through and he called me and asked me where a good place to get gas was and to eat because he had a team that was heading to Lake Charles to go help with the hurricane relief. And I was like, well, you got room in your vehicle? And he said, yeah. So I jumped in with them on the way in and we went to Lake Charles to go assist with the relief efforts there. And they got hit very hard.
Yes, it did.
They got a direct.
Okay, so you say yes to the opportunity to go serve along with other friends in your profession. You're on the run now to go find out what God has for you. What did you find when you got there?
It was just destruction. You see some of the pictures and stuff on the news, but it doesn't do justice. They got houses with the roofs torn off and trees down everywhere. Every single utility line that you would see, you don't even realize how often you see these utility lines because they're always in the air. But when they're all on the ground and the transformers and everything, it's like, wow, there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
We come to the realization at night that maybe they should have picked a different color for power lines than black.
Exactly.
Maybe like a lime green or something, because it's hard to see them. And things at night.
Yeah.
It was just breathtaking to see the amount of destruction there was and trying to go find where we could serve. We had a communication with a group of volunteers that were trying to get relief sent to Lake Charles area, but they didn't have communications with other groups and they didn't have good communications with state groups and the USAR teams and EOC centers. So we were kind of on our own, and it was just difficult getting hooked up with the people that needed help at first.
But because you're somebody who's from Louisiana and having lived upstate for many years and now living right in the heart of the state, you know the lay of the land, and now you have friends coming over from the Slidell area, eastern part of Louisiana, to help you out, and they drug you along. You do know how to get around. You probably figured out, we got to go find people that need help and figure out where there's no help getting to anybody. So how did you go about that, and what did you find when you struck a little farther out from Lake Charles?
When we first got in, we went and met a group, some of the volunteers from the Cajun Navy, in a parking lot. They were doing different operations than what we were planning on doing. We had a paramedic with us and some firemen, so we were prepared to go and help with rescues or go help do welfare checks or whatever the need be. We ended up going to find the Florida and Mississippi and Alabama task force, the USAR teams. They were all staging at a sporting goods store. So when we were talking to them, they said, you know, well, there's so many resources here that, you know, y'all aren't really needed, and we were planning on cutting some of these groups loose. We were a little bit discouraged. We're like, well, you know, we drove all this way, and it sounds like they don't need us, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. It means, you know, people are getting the help they need, but we didn't realize how bad the communication situation was at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, we were a little bit discouraged there, but the Lord led us to another group that had found us on a social media platform that told us to go to Sulphur, Louisiana, which is about 20, 30 minutes outside of Lake Charles. And at this time, the I-10 bridge was closed because they had a factory that had a fire and it was releasing chlorine gas, which
yes, I saw that.
Is a very, very toxic gas. So they were working on that, so they had to take the back roads. And we end up in Sulphur, and there was a nursing home complex. It was an assisted living apartment complex, and the caretakers abandoned them. They left whenever the storm was hitting, so we had about 30 or 40 people inside.
With no staff at all?
With no staff at all, with a four-story building, no power, very little food, very little water. They had one home health nurse that stayed to help. Oh, sorry about that. I don't think that's for me. The pager that I use doesn't catch all the departments I run for, so I have to keep it open, and here's the whole parish. So.
Oh, that's fine.
It could get kind of crazy.
I understand. There's always that risk of you getting called away to something.
Yeah. So we're at this apartment complex, and the police department are there, and we're trying to get people to evacuate and leave. It's very hot and stuffy inside the building because, of course, there's no electricity. And a lot of these people are bedridden, and, you know, the elevators don't work because the power's out. You know, we started bringing water to people and helping them, you know, get their pets and get their stuff ready to go. And the police department ended up borrowing some buses, and police officers actually drove those buses in to help evacuate these people.
Did everyone survive?
Yeah, everybody was fine there. There was a couple people that decided to stay back, and we tried explaining to them, you know, they were telling us it could be 20 days before the electricity turned back on.
Yeah, but you couldn't convince them to go.
We couldn't convince them to go. We ended up having to go back and rescue them.
Wow.
Because after about 4 days, they ran out of food, water, and the gas and the generator. And they were like, what do we do? So we had to go back and get them.
Very hard when you're dealing with people who are stayed enough in their ways that they can't see a change coming. And it's very disruptive, and especially if you're dealing with anybody who's facing memory care issues. So I understand it's a delicate thing to be respectful of your elders and kind and still have an understanding that they don't understand the danger they're facing in the future, much less the danger they're currently in right now. It's a very sensitive place to be, and I'm glad you dealt with that sensitively.
I've always had respect for our elders, and I've always, you know, loved elderly people. I love people, and I love...
I'm glad you're doing that job.
Yeah, showing up, you know, I can be an extension of God's love through me.
Friends, before we jump back to today's interview, I just want to remind you that Compassion Radio is a communications ministry, and it depends on the faithful support of you to keep bringing inspiring stories to the air each day. Our vision partners support us monthly with gifts large and small and make it possible for us to take you to the very front lines of faith. Whether you join our vision team or make a one-time gift, thank you for believing in and standing by this ministry. We're here to bring you real good news in every situation. Just call us at 1-800-868-2478 to make your gift. You can also text the word COMPASSION to 53445 to give right through your phone, or visit our website, CompassionRadio.com. Thank you, friends, for everything you've done and what you'll do today. We love you. And now, back to the interview.
They don't understand the danger they're facing in the future, much less the danger they're currently in right now. It's a very sensitive place to be, and I'm glad you dealt with that sensitively.
I've always had respect for our elders, and I've always, you know, loved elderly people. I love people, and I love...
I'm glad you're doing that job.
Yes. Showing up, you know, I can be an extension of God's love through me. The team I was with, we were all from different backgrounds, and there were some believers and there's some that weren't, but I had one of them made a comment to me. He's like, you know, you're so understanding with people. And I said, well, it's, you know, it's not me, it's God. He's working through me to help these people. I wasn't planning on being here. I don't know what we're doing after this, but it's, you know, wherever he leads us, and I'm going to follow that. You know, even in this situation where, worst case scenario for these people, you know, they're having to leave their home. They don't know where they're going. And I couldn't tell them where they were going. All I knew is we were taking them from this place to another area And then in that other area, they were going to figure out where everybody was going. It was a very stressful situation for them and us to just be a glimmer of hope in this situation. There was actually a nun that was staying in there that we were helping her get all of her things together. And she was praying for us the whole time and
awesome.
Praying for the safety of her friends and family. It was a very powerful moment we had in her apartment while we were getting ready to get her out, her and her cats. It was just a really wonderful thing to be a part of at that time.
It is, and sad, too, because people are saying goodbye to their comfort, their familiarity, wondering if they might ever go back. I'm sure these people are still in flux in many ways. We need to be praying for those who have been dislocated, especially those who are most vulnerable among us.
Oh, definitely.
You did the work that God called you to do there in Sulphur, Louisiana. What happened next?
After that, we went to the Sulphur police station where we were staying. We slept on the floor at the police station there. We ended up going back out to Lake Charles that night for another mission to go check on some people who they hadn't heard from in a while.
Mm.
We ended up not being able to get in there that night, so we came back and we got very little sleep. It's not the most comfortable thing, sleeping on the floor.
In a police station.
In a police station, yeah, correct. So the next morning we went back out and found that the people there had been evacuated, so we were able to check back in with their families. We were told that there was other groups going further towards Texas that would need us. So there's a small town called Vent, Louisiana. So we went over there. The sheriff's office there, the little sheriff's substation, there wasn't anybody there. And the volunteer fire department there wasn't anybody there.
Hmm.
So we just started driving up Route 66. So we found our way. It comes out to this fire station. And there's a bunch of people outside. It was a Calcasieu Parish Fire District 1, Ward 6.
Hmm.
We met the fire chief there, and his name is Todd Parker. He was standing out front, and, you know, we told him, I said, hey, you know, we're a group of firemen and first responders. If you know of any groups around here that need help, send us their way. He said, do y'all have certification? He said, yes, sir. He said, do y'all have gear? And Joe said, well, I have my gear. He looked at me and he said, well, you go with this guy and go get fitted in some gear for us. He said, I need Joe to get familiar with this truck. I need y'all to run our truck because they had a lot of calls going on and all their volunteer firemen's houses were destroyed. So they're trying to take care of their home and take care of their community. And so that was just wild. That kind of stuff doesn't typically happen in our line of work.
Mm.
But next thing you know, we're riding out on one of their pumpers and, you know, helping clear trees, helping their firemen serve their community, even though they don't have a home to go back to. And that was a really powerful situation over there.
This brings to mind the whole spiritual principle of coming under others and serving first, looking towards the interests of others before yourself. When you see others that are serving out of their own sacrifice, out of their own loss, because of what you do, that obviously commands respect from you because you understand that they have taken up the highest values, the highest ethics of the profession you're in. So what else can you do but give them everything they need? You don't want to send them back home just to sit around and commiserate over their losses. They need to have a purpose too. So you support them. You support your fellows in the profession of firefighting and emergency work, and you walk alongside them while they walk through their grief and help others in theirs too. That's an incredibly powerful and important role to play when God gives it to you. What kind of response at the end of that time you had in that parish did you get from the firefighters you were assisting who had lost everything?
It was one of the most humbling experiences. I compare it to some of these mission trips that me and my dad have taken to some, you know, very poor countries.
Mm.
It reminded me so much of the way we were serving. And, it, you know, you go to another country and you go serve their community and you help them out, and the response you get from the people that you're helping, it's just very heartwarming. But this isn't thousands of miles away in a different country. This is right here in our home, in our backyard.
Mm-hmm.
So working with these guys, they would say that, you know, their house is completely destroyed, and I would go by and help them get some stuff out and tarp their roof, and they have nothing to go home to. They're really damaged, and this is just the beginning for them because now they have to figure out what the insurance and figure out everything else. They're not worried about what's going to be replaced. They're worried about their neighbor. Mm-hmm. They're going and manning their fire station and going to calls and tarping the roofs of their neighbors' houses and cutting trees down to help their neighbors and fellow community members be able to get access to the resources they need, you know, never mind what's going on at home. And it's just the biggest sacrifice that you could think of from these community members to not even worry about what's going on in their home, but to worry about what's going on with their neighbor. And, and that's very powerful. The rest of our trip was just, you know, responding to the emergencies for Ward 6 and then cutting trees down and stuff like that. So I have a lot of stories of some really big trees we cut down if
you
don't want to hear that.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a whole lot of people out there with their wood shops would be turning wood bowls for the next 20 years.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of firewood over there if y'all need any.
Fair enough. I love oak. All right. Riley, after this experience and bringing it all home, you've had a little bit of time to decompress. What are you learning from all this, and what's God teaching you?
It showed me that I'm fulfilling my purpose of what God's called me to do. And it might not be here in my community. It might be, you know, wherever he sends me. But it did give me a lot of time to reflect and to make me thankful for the things that I have and thankful that the storm that came through wasn't as bad here. But it really put these guys in my heart. I pray for them constantly throughout the day. It showed that no matter what happens, no matter what's taken away, God is still there and he still will provide, whether he's providing for you or he's using you to provide for somebody else.
God is a provider, for sure. And I'm just thankful that God provided you to the community you serve in now and to the people of Louisiana that needed you. May you prosper in all the ways that matter, and may you continue to serve for many years to come. I pray that you are truly at home for the time that God has you in that part of Louisiana, even if your hope in the long run might still be to get back up to a Shreveport near the rest of your family. God's brought you to a special place, Riley, and I thank you for saying yes to God's opportunity and his call on your life. Any last words you would like to say to Compassion Radio listeners out there, or maybe other friends or comrades you have in the field of work you do, firefighters, first responders?
For all of our firefighters and first responders out there, just keep faith, keep your head up, and continue to do the Lord's work through you. And for everybody else that's listening there, there's a lot of food drives, a lot of drive for supplies and stuff like that to send to these areas that were affected. So I'm sure that if you feel led to donate supplies or monetary donations to one of these groups, there's plenty of them around. So just keep that in mind while everybody is rebuilding and repairing and on the long road to recovery from this storm. So please keep all these responders and the people affected by the storm in your prayers.
Indeed we will. Riley Grisham from down at Grand Coteau and Lafayette area of Louisiana, thank you so much for sharing your story. And I hope we have a chance to check in again with some more good news stories of all that happened since the time you were there as part of the relief team after the great hurricane of 2020. Thanks again for joining us, friend.
Definitely. Thank you for having me.
Come down, O love divine. Seek thou this soul of mine and visit it with thine own ardor glowing. O Comforter, draw near. With alone.
with which the soul will long shall far outpass the power human telling. For none can.
There is so much to be thankful for, even in hard times. Right now, I'm very thankful for you. Your gift of time each day is a genuine treasure to us. Knowing that you're being challenged to live out your faith like never before is a wonderful encouragement to us as well. I hope you'll take time today to drop us a note through our website or by email. You can reach me directly at the following address, bramfloria@compassionradio.com. However you reach out, know that we're in this ministry and this work for you and because of you. Just call or write us today to help keep us on the air and in the field. Call 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And jump in anytime at CompassionRadio.com. We're waiting for you, friends. Hop on board.